The headline from overnight is stark. The preliminary U.S.-Iran ceasefire that had been holding, however tenuously, is gone. President Trump declared it over at the NATO summit in Ankara, and the declaration came accompanied by reports that U.S. and Iranian forces had already exchanged strikes through the night. This is a situation that has escalated faster than most analysts expected even 2 weeks ago.
The Ankara summit context matters enormously here. Trump chose this venue, NATO's first summit in Turkey in decades, and what he delivered wasn't reassurance to allies. It was a series of confrontational moves. He singled out Spain specifically, threatening trade punishment over what he described as insufficient defense commitments. Spain's Prime Minister Sanchez has been one of the more vocal European critics of Trump's Iran approach. So this reads partly as geopolitical payback rather than a purely principled stance on NATO burden sharing.
And the CNN reporting on the school strike is the piece of this that I think demands the most scrutiny. According to their sources, U.S. commanders went ahead with a strike that killed civilians at what turned out to be a school, despite intelligence warnings flagging the civilian risk. This pattern, commanders overriding intel, raises questions about the rules of engagement currently governing U.S. military action in Iran, and whether Congress has any meaningful visibility into those rules. The war powers clock is running.
There's a historical parallel worth drawing here. In the early stages of the 2003 Iraq campaign, there were similar reports of intelligence being sidelined when it produced inconvenient conclusions. The institutional pressure to execute a campaign plan can override analytical caution, and the downstream consequences of those decisions tend to compound. What we don't yet know is whether this was a one-off command failure or a signal of a broader permissiveness about civilian risk in the current campaign.
Meanwhile, the EIA is projecting that global oil output will recover to pre-war levels by year-end, which seems optimistic given that we've just watched the ceasefire collapse. Markets are clearly skeptical of that timeline. Iranian crude accounts for a meaningful share of global supply when sanctions aren't fully enforced. And if the conflict intensifies, that supply comes off the table quickly.
The NATO allies' posture in Ankara is worth describing accurately. Most European leaders came in hoping to use this summit to reinforce collective commitments on Ukraine aid and defense spending. What they got was Trump threatening Spain on trade, making vague promises about Ukraine resolution, and announcing an expansion of military operations in the Middle East. The alliance managed to hold together its communique language, but the private conversations between European foreign ministers were reportedly tense.
Trump's claim that the Ukraine war will be settled soon is particularly interesting to examine, alongside what Finland's President Alexander Stubb said at the same summit, that Ukraine has already won the war. Sweden's prime minister echoed that framing. These are NATO leaders essentially arguing that Russia has failed strategically, that its military has been degraded beyond recovery, and that a settlement should reflect Ukrainian gains rather than Russian demands. Trump's soon language, historically in his usage, tends to signal a desire for a deal that both sides can declare victory, which may be a very different end state than what Stubb is describing.
And threading through all of this is the question of Israeli strikes in Gaza, where 7 people were killed Tuesday, including an aid official who had been organizing World Cup screenings for displaced Palestinians. The timing, this person was killed shortly before the Egypt-Argentina match, captures something about the grinding daily reality of that conflict that gets lost in the larger strategic narratives. There were people in Gaza who just wanted to watch a football match, and one of the people making that possible is dead now.
The EU's separate move to tell 5 Caribbean nations to end their citizenship by investment programs by 2028 is also tied to this broader geopolitical moment, though it doesn't get much U.S. coverage. Antigua's Prime Minister Gaston Brown pushed back hard, warning that phasing out these programs, which generate significant GDP for small island economies, would cause irreparable harm. From Brussels' perspective, these programs create security vulnerabilities because they allow Russian oligarchs and others to acquire EU-adjacent travel documents. It's another front in the broader economic warfare playing out globally.